Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 2nd to 22nd, 2017 in communities across Canada. The RVF series, which showcases the diversity, duality, and dynamism of Canada's Francophone communities, is brought to you by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and this station. Please stay tuned for the next half hour for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie. Visit ncra.ca/RVF for more information on the series.
Hi, I'm Victoria Fenner in Barrie, Ontario. The program you're about to hear is about something that my family never talked about. It wasn't like it was a big secret, but we just never talked about it. So, why not?
Can I borrow you for a minute? How do you say, this is a story I haven't told before? En français.
Comment dit-on?
Comment dit-on?
Voici une histoire que j'ai jamais racontée.
Lentement, s'il vous plaît.
Lentement?
My French isn't very good, is it?
It could use a bit of work.
This is my husband, mon mari. Is that how you say it?
Oui, c'est ça.
Ed, his name is Ed. He's not French, but he is bilingual. I'm trying to be bilingual, but I have to admit I'm not really trying all that hard either. Speaking French wasn't a huge priority in the place where I grew up, and I was born into a mostly English family, so I never really learned it. I grew up in Essex County, which is right on the edges of one of the historic Francophone communities in Ontario, so you would think I might have picked up a little bit. Roscomb is just outside of Windsor, close to Belle River, which in French would be Belle Rivière.
Belle Rivière, oui.
And it really surprises people to find out that that is a really heavily Francophone area. Detroit now, was one of the furthest west settlements that happened right after Quebec City and Montreal were established. So they pushed forward as far as Detroit and established a settlement there. People moved across the border because there weren't any borders back then. And so a lot of a lot of French people settled on the northern shore of Essex County. The little village, Roscomb, where I was born, was actually on the dividing line halfway through the county, which pretty much separated English Essex County with French Essex County. The place where we lived was on the King's Highway and the corner of the French line. So that gives you a little bit of a clue there about what was happening. English Essex County and French Essex County were divided by that road. I was very much part of an English family, and we didn't associate very much with our Francophone neighbors. And I was only like 7 when I left. So these are very, 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 very early impressions. The person I'm going to introduce right now is Kimberly Simon. She was my very, very first best friend, and she lived just down the road from us. And I gave her a call. She lives in Kimberley, BC now. I called her and I said, well, what do you remember about those times?
I got really close to a Francophone family in Roscomb, and I enjoyed it. I mean, it was just a whole different culture thing, and they had 9 kids, and, you know, dinners were like, you know, bag of potatoes. And I mean, it was just different from my family where there were 3 kids, sorry. And what I remember is big parties on the street, big street parties when it was somebody's birthday in the Francophone family. And I mean, music and, you know, outdoors. I remember those as well.
Time frame is a bit helpful here. This was the early 1960s when we were little tiny kids together.
So as you were growing up there, did you know any French kids? Because you were on the borderline there, there'd be obviously some kind of crossover.
I didn't. It was odd because we were taught that somehow they were not like us.
There was that because of the Catholic-Protestant divide as well?
Well, that is something we're going to get into. I talked to someone else up here in Barrie. I ran into a man with a very familiar last name. His name is Andre Beneteau. I asked him about what his experience was. He was very gracious and agreed to sit in my living room and talk about what it was like growing up in French Essex County, although he didn't live actually out in the county. His extended family came from that area. So here's Andre Beneteau.
There are 12 families that founded Detroit. One of them were the Beneteaus. My dad was from the county, just outside of Windsor, and on a farm, small farm, there was just him and his sister. And his sister married another local man, and they had a farm. My dad was the one who was sent off to school by the parish to get educated. So he never worked the farm after he was, a teenager. And he he became a mechanical engineer eventually. Long story, but so he was the city guy, and we were the city kids. And we really noticed it when we went to visit our cousins, who were the country kids. There was a whole room full of, a whole house full of kids. We had six kids in our family. They had six or seven, I think, in their family. But we really noticed the difference in the culture from the farm kids and us, at least when we were young.
How so?
Well, they were like the country hicks, and we were the city kids. They were just as smart and sophisticated as we were, but we didn't know that.
The way that Andre talks about his cousins on the farm was very, very similar to what we thought about the French kids on the farm, even though we were English kids on the farm. There's definitely a feeling of a divide there, but looking back on it now and after talking to Andre, I think some of it had to do with class distinctions as well. So,
oh, for sure.
In exploring this topic, I'm finding there's a whole mixture of layers of things that are going on. It's not just French English. It's a whole bunch of other things, too, which we'll get into in a minute. Since that time, I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do this piece, too, was that I've been doing a lot of writing these days about my early years growing up in Roscommon. And part of the reason is because it's a very special place to me. It's a place where I go back to, and I think, this is still home for me. I talked to Kimberly and I talked to her about this sort of romanticized concept of the village. And she said, "Are you kidding?" And she lived there until she was a teenager and went away to university. So I think it's because I was a very, very small child that I had this romantic idea about this place, which is home. And a lot of the things that I'm exploring on this this talk that I'm doing right now in this piece is encountering that maybe kind of darker side that I'm not so proud of in that place. And so my background now was primarily English. There's German there too, but we were more proud of our English and Scottish heritage, a little bit of the Irish. I always knew that I was also of French heritage, but I never really explored that. Not because I didn't have the knowledge, and that's really interesting. There's someone you're going to hear from right now who's a very special person in my life. Before my grandmother Wallace passed away in 1992, a few years before that, I'd had the foresight to sit down and talk to her about our family history. So she had actually compiled the whole history of the area, including many family trees and including ours.
That's a treasure right there.
It absolutely is. And I'm just so glad, especially now that I was preparing this documentary, that I was able to sit down and talk to her, because now I have her voice to bring to all of you. Here's my Grandma Wallace. Her name is Madeline Delaurier Wallace. So that adds a little bit of color to my heritage and this the history of the story.
Here's where the family started. C. Sylvain and Mary in the Diocese of Bourges.
Yeah, France.
Mauvier. They were parents of the following and were on the first generation of the family in Canada.
Really?
Well, in 1705, a son, Francis, was born. Mm-hmm. He became a soldier in the Army of Dunoyan of Quebec, of Canada.
Oh.
February the 26th, he married Susan Colin. born April 15, 1714, at St. Francis, Isle of Orleans. They called it the Isle of Jesus at that time. Daughter of Andrew Colon, Duke La Liberté, and Jane Cadieu.
My grandmother's books trace the Deloriers back to France. What she didn't trace, though, was the maternal lineage back to France. She started with the first generation of men who came over here. The women in the Delorier family came over much, much earlier than the men did. The significant thing is that Suzanne Collin was descended from some of the original settlers of New France. Mm. Her two grandmothers, Jacqueline Labbé and Marie Valade, I found out were both daughters of the king, les filles de roi.
Oh, so who were les filles de roi?
Les filles de roi were women who were recruited by the king of France and his agents, which is why they were called the daughters of the king. They weren't actually his daughters, but they realized over in France that if they wanted the men to stay over in New France and establish a colony, they needed to send some women over. They found women in reduced circumstances who could be enticed to make a better life for themselves by coming over to the middle of the bush in this place called New France. They gave them a small dowry. They gave them a little trousseau with some clothes and a little sewing kit and some stockings. And they said, you're going to New France to meet the man of your dreams. What is the man of your dreams in French?
Un mari idéal. Okay. Something like that. You know, yeah. So l'homme de mes rêves. But I don't think they'd use that expression.
But, right. So the ideal man. You're going.
Ideal man.
Yeah. So these were two of my great, 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 great. I don't know how many greats, but a lot of greats back there. And Marie Valade was actually Marie Valade. Is that how it would be
Marie
pronounced?
Marie Valade.
Marie Valade.
Yeah.
See, I'm learning here. She was on the first ship of women that landed in Montreal. And Jacqueline Labbé came a little bit later, I think about 10 years after that. I think the reason why I'm mentioning this story now is because it just gets, my imagination is stirring and I'm thinking of all kinds of scenarios and storylines. And also, too, to realize that I am descended from the people who founded New France is...
It gives you roots that you didn't know you had.
The music that you're listening to right now, and the title of this piece is Le Mariage Anglais. And that is what I'm calling this piece because I think it's what happened, I think, in this story. So the words are...
It was the daughter of a French king that one marries to an Englishman. Oh, my dear brothers, forbid to take me. I would like better a French soldier than an English king. And when it came to marry him inside Paris, had to pass. There is no lady of Paris who does not cry to see leaving the daughter of the king to an Englishman.
And that's what happened, although in some ways it happened in reverse. Here's my grandmother again, and she's going to tell us more about how the family story unfolded.
Yeah. That's when my grandfather was baptized and joined the Baptist Church, you see.
Why did your grandfather join the Baptist Church?
Because I suppose he liked the preacher, I don't know. His mother was a U.E. loyalist, you see. His father was a Catholic.
What my grandmother referred to in that clip was what happens to a lot of families, I think, when they marry into another culture. The culture which they came from disappears and they get assimilated. And it happened in reverse. It's often if a woman marries into another culture, then it's her culture that gets, you know, obliterated. In the case of the Deloriers, it was the men who married English women. And then the English women, their culture became dominant. So when my grandmother was talking about the United Empire Loyalists, the person she's talking about is Jean-Baptiste Delaurier, who was from Detroit, married Julia Hazel, the daughter of not just a United Empire Loyalist, but also one who had been decorated for his service to the British during, first of all, the American Revolutionary War, and second of all, during the War of 1812. So, interesting too, just a little side note, that Jean-Baptiste Delaurier also fought for the Americans in the War of 1812. So, what he and his father-in-law had to talk about around the dinner table just is another really, really fascinating story that I would just, I love this stuff, you know? It's like one story leads to another,
It's being a fly on the wall in hindsight.
And I do wonder about my great-great-grandfathers. Gilbert Delaurier was my great-grandfather. Fred Delaurier, Frederick Wellington Delaurier. That's kind of a sign of just how French they were, eh? So, but I think the thing which makes me the saddest about this is I wonder whether they changed and assimilated into an English community and identity because of the discrimination that was around them. When I think about this and I think about maybe the reasons why that my grandfathers might have assumed more of an English identity, I think back to our little village. And there was discrimination there. Absolutely. There was prejudice. There was a superior attitude that the English felt. I really, really think that's too bad that that's what I picked up. On the other hand, I was seven when I left, so I can't be too hard on myself here. But there was discrimination. And so my friend Kimberly and I talked about what that could have been all about.
Like, it was kind of weird because we went to public school, and what it's kind of funny because there at the time it was public school here, Catholic school here, and there was quite a divide between the schools, the kids at the schools. So I remember brawls on the street, you know, on the sidewalk when some of the kids from the two schools would start fighting.
What was that about, do you think?
Oh, I have no idea. Like, looking back, I'm really curious to know what that was about. It made no sense to me, and I don't know. I don't know what it was.
I can just remember this sense that somehow the people who went to the Catholic Church and who went to separate schools and had French last names were just not our kind.
We grew up in a, you know, farm country. There was a lot of prejudice, a lot of racism, a lot of prejudice in that community that we wouldn't really have noticed at the time, but it was definitely there.
I don't know how much of it had to do with being French and how much of it had to do with being Catholic, because I know we were told a lot of things about the Catholic Church that weren't necessarily true.
And that's what I was wondering too, like how much was Catholic versus Protestant? And really Francophone versus the English. I think the divide perhaps was more the religious stuff.
Yeah, so it's really quite a mixed bag when I'm asking myself, and as I look at all of these influences in my early life, how much of it was class, how much of it was religion. And I also talked to Andre Beneteau about the divide as well.
I don't recall in growing up myself feeling that I was, you know, the underdog because of the French, though I did hear about it.
What kinds of things did you
hear?
Well,
I have to really think about this because it was so not terribly important that I never, you know, it was a long time ago. I left Windsor in 1971. Yeah, I think there may have been a feeling, and it's not a clear memory, but there was a feeling that the English, it's sort of the English bosses, you know, the money was English, and the everyday working folks, anybody that you knew who was a French family were everyday working folk. They weren't rich. They were just, you know, I mean, we were modestly well off. You know, my dad worked for the same company for 30 some odd years, and we did okay. We had a house, like, you know, most people had a house.
When I was a kid, like, this is going to sound really awful, but I really want to be honest. When I grew up, I had the impression that French families were all too big. They were all poorly educated, and they were all poor. I mean, I was like 6 years old, you know, and it's like you're talking about the water that we swim in. That was the water I swam in.
Sure. That was probably true. And for me, the divide was partially French, but it was more Catholic and non-Catholic. When I grew up, I was immersed in Catholicism from an early age, and you took it for granted that if you're a French Canadian, you were also Catholic. But when I was living in not a French Canadian community in Windsor and in Detroit especially, I was still immersed in Catholicism. You went to a Catholic school, you had a Catholic church next to it. You know, in Detroit, we used to go and meet our class in the church for Mass in the morning before school. And so we were the same. We just went to, it was all Catholic all the time. And we didn't, it was weird to be in Cubs and not be all Catholic. Oh, they were non-Catholic kids here, you know. And we, as Catholics, were taught that same superiority that you're talking about the English having. And it was, you looked down on anybody who was less than Catholic.
Oh, so the superiority ran in both ways.
That's right. It was.
Aren't human beings funny?
Really funny. And, you know, it's. It took years to sort of sort that out and say, that's not very important or very nice.
There's a really interesting expression that French Canadians use in particular, both in Quebec and otherwise. And the phrase is, c'est pas catholique ça, which means that's not very nice. That's not very good. You're not doing it properly. So it's that kind of joining Catholicism with that which is right, even in the idiomatic French language, that asserts that superiority there.
Well, and what Andre said at the very end as well, that's not very important or very nice. And I thought, yeah, that's not very important or very nice. It was funny because I asked my two older sisters, who are 2 years older than me, so they would have been 9 when we left Ruscombe. I asked them if they wanted to talk to me about this subject and specifically about the perception of Francophone families in the village where we lived, and they declined. And that was specifically because they said that they wouldn't be able to talk about those days and those conditions and still be honest and yet without reinforcing some really bad stereotypes. Kimberly and I talked about it, though. So it was kind of horrible in a way, wasn't it?
Oh, looking back on it, it was very, yeah. I mean, it's not what we're used to today. It seems surreal to me that it was like that. Everyone was civil, but definitely a divide. And we were right there. Like, Ruscombe was a teeny tiny town.
So what do you think? What did you gain personally through your association and friendship with the Francophone family who you told me about?
I think it's an acceptance of people and differences in people and enjoying the differences. You know, it's like noticing and enjoying some of the differences. And so I would say just more acceptance of each other for who we are, rather than an expectation that you should be like me.
What difference does it make then in contemporary Canada that you are a granddaughter of two mothers of New France?
It matters and it doesn't matter. And I think that maybe where it if I had known this earlier, if I'd known about our lineage on the French side, maybe I would have taken more pride in my French heritage. Maybe I would have seen the neighbors around me and be able to see that really they're the same as we are because we are them. So maybe I would have embraced the French part of my heritage. Maybe I wouldn't be embarrassed about my bad French pronunciation because maybe I would have learned to have spoken French. Here's something that really does still make me feel uncomfortable as I'm talking about this. Those English roots really, really run deep. So when I think of those early days of New France and my two great grand-mères, it adds another dimension to my story. When I think back, though, of being a little girl back in Ruscombe, there's still this very, very deep-seated feeling that they are the other, and we are the other, and we're the richer other, and the superior other. And that makes me feel really, really not good. So I think that we're always trying to get over our prejudices, and we're always trying to get over the things that we learned as children, and trying to become better people relating to more parts of the world than we did when we were children.
I just wanted to say, as you were saying that, it brought up getting back to those childhood feelings of what the other was like, can perhaps be a good starting point for discussions about things that have to do with the other, such as other genders, other expressions of gender, other races, other nationalities, other religions. Wherever there's that divide, there's that mistrust. It's because we've never really been in contact with these people. And once you're in contact, once you've sat down and had a beer and a breakfast with them, they don't become the other anymore. They become your neighbors.
And maybe when I was a child, if some of those French kids came to my birthday party, maybe I would feel a lot differently than I do now.
You would have had a lot more fun.
You've been listening to Le Mariage Anglais, a sound work by me, Victoria Fenner, created in the fall of 2017 in Barrie, Ontario. Special thanks to Edward St. Moritz, performer of the music, Kimberly Simon, and Andre Beneteau, who graciously agreed to talk to explore ideas with me for this piece. I dedicate this work to my grandmother, Madeline Foster Delaurier Wallace. She's been gone now since 1994, and it was wonderful to hear her voice again as she shared her knowledge of family, of community, and shared experience. She asked questions until the day she died. Her natural curiosity has inspired me throughout my life. Thanks, Grandma. I miss you. I wish you were still here so I could share the new things that I found out. And I would have loved to have asked you the questions I explored in this documentary and to find out why you think we weren't very French. I'm sure you had theories. Love, Victoria. And thanks for your inquiring mind. Merci pour votre esprit curieux.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, presented by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Camps and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and The Station. To learn more about the RVF series and the National RVF Celebration, and to send us your comments, visit ncra.ca/RVF.